Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, the Electric Sisterhood, and On Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
To all my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Davy Duck. Well, if there was something we can truly learn from last week, it's that if you want to make a game that you know many people would want to play, then go and kickstart it. The creator of Castlevania wanted to make a game that wanted to go back to its roots, but no business executive wanted to do it because they thought no one would play it. Well, as of this recording, its Kickstarter has reached well over 2 million, four times what he was asking for. The dudes who made Banjo-Kazooie wished to make a spiritual successor called Yooka-Laylee, and they've cleared over 2.5 million, covering all their stretch goals. Let's also not forget about past success stories like Keiji Inafune's Mighty No. 9 and Pencil Test Studios' Armacrog. Meanwhile, the likes of Konami and Sega are now foregoing all console gaming and sticking to mobile, signaling rough times for them. But that's what happens when you think so close-minded. You fucked up a great publisher, and now you're paying for it with budget and staff cuts, studios shutting down, and the loss of respect from your once loyal fan base. Now, the people who once made your classics are now going out doing their own thing and being more successful with those than when you held them back. Remember, people, never force creativity to be imprisoned. Let it fly free and success will come your way. Anyways, we have an excellent show prepared for you today, so let's not delay and get the playlist started. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. Let's start off with a new track from Chet Monty's latest album, Kiyome. This rocking melody goes by the name of Kokoroto Atama.
Oh, 난 도입될 밖에 やってくからんて。いつまで経ってもわからないよな。 大事にすればよかった。もっと大事にいればよかった。
Those familiar with the anime Barakamon will find that band familiar. That was Super Beaver with Kekkeron off of their new album, Aisuru. At PAX East this past year, the very last game I went hands-on with was won by the folks over at Tsukibon Games called Valhalla, a very unique twist on the visual novel genre. And today, I am happy to introduce to No Borders Erased one of the guys responsible for this cool little game. Please welcome all the way from Venezuela, the music man of Tsukibon Games, Michael Kelly.
Hi, Evan. Great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me. And good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could be on the show. So first of all, tell us a bit about Tsukibon Games.
Sure. Tsukibon Games was actually formed by Chris and Fernando, and they brought me on board as the music composer. Now, those guys are actually from Venezuela. I was actually based here in America, and we kept in touch through various means online and everything. Originally,
sorry about that.
You're fine. And Chris and Fernando actually worked together before, working on various projects and different anime-related stuff. And then once we actually started work on Valhalla, we actually kind of banded together and created the group Tsukuban Games.
Excellent. So the name Tsukuban means delinquent boss girl. So how does this image fit with your development team?
I guess it could kind of... I don't necessarily want to say our attitude towards game development, but I think it can kind of reflect a little bit more our, I guess, a carefree attitude to... We're going to approach the style of games that we make the way we want to. We take a lot of pride in that. We want to tell the stories that we want to tell. We want to provide the aesthetics the way we want to provide them. And we do that in a way to where we really don't take too much consideration into other sources. So I guess we kind of came up with the name Tsukuban Games as kind of a reference to that rebel mindset of, you know, hey, we're gonna make what we want to make, screw the political correctness, screw you know, any outside influences. We want to tell the stories we want to tell, and we want to do it in a way that we want to do it.
And hey, it's been very successful for other game companies, so I'm glad you have that sort of mentality. Make the games that you want to make. Make the games that you yourself would want to play, and that droves of people will come along and play the game as well.
Right.
So, for those unfamiliar yet with the game, can you dive into what Valhalla is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Valhalla is a cyberpunk bartending game in which you take the role of Jill. She's actually the bartender at this establishment, and the game is going to revolve around her serving drinks to various patrons or inhabitants of this cyberpunk world that's greatly inspired by 80s and 90s anime. Part of what she does, too, is listens to their problems and helps them through. Now, as the story actually progresses in Valhalla, without going a little bit too far into it, Jill is actually a little bit down on her luck. You know, she's broke, she doesn't have much money, and she actually got to this point where we dive into her character in the game from following her dreams. You know, it's kind of always a dream of her to become a mixologist. And just like in any case where someone, I guess, chooses to follow their dreams or pursue something, there comes a lot of struggle and there comes a lot of sacrifice that needs to be made with that. So the story of Valhalla is actually going to dive into that, and we're going to see what that means for Jill and how she's going to handle that too.
So, where did the idea for Valhalla come from? Like, I know you mentioned some anime inspirations and such. So, how did all that turn into what this game has become?
It's actually pretty interesting. We were actually working on a different project, and then last year, I want to say it was around March or so, I believe Itch.io had the Cyberpunk Game Jam. And we wanted to take a little bit of a refresher to kind of recharge our batteries on the current project. And the three of us are actually very, very big fans of cyberpunk anime from the 80s and 90s. And Chris came to me with the idea of doing like a bartender game, you know, just a quick little flash game for the cyberpunk jam and to write some music for it. So we thought, cool, you know, let's do that. And we were pretty happy with it. And then it actually turned out to be a lot more popular than we expected. So from there, we decided to work on more of a demo version, a prologue version of that. And then from there, it really kind of evolved into its own thing. You know, we really started to dive into these characters. What are they like? What are their personalities like? What is their daily life like for them? And then we really started to kind of dive into the main character, Jill, and, you know, kind of fleshing her out and, you know, deciding what kind of story and narrative we wanted to tell through Valhalla.
So I know you mentioned some 80s, 90s anime cyberpunk influences. I can imagine something like Ghost in the Shell and Armitage. What other anime series helped influence the creation of Valhalla?
I would definitely, you know, those are two very, very big ones. I would also say Pat Labor. Let's see, we've got Bubblegum Crisis.
Good series.
Yeah, definitely. I would say a lot of the old school Gundam series would be a big one as well. I think that's about it that I can think of off the top of my head. So those were a lot of the anime influences. And we also had a lot of older video game influences, you know, things like Police Knots and Snatcher, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, you're the second person to mention Snatcher to me this past week. So that's fantastic because I remember that game when I was a little bit younger, and I'm surprised people still remember it.
That's a pretty... it's classic as far as I'm concerned, and I think it's a kind of a cult classic with a lot of people.
So, who came up with the phrase waifu bartending?
I don't know if it was Christopher Fernando. But yeah, they, you know, one day they were like, well, here's our website. And I noticed that the URL was waifu bartending. And I was like, ah, that's pretty creative. And the reactions we get when people first read that has been pretty hilarious so far. But I think at the same time, on the same token of that, it's really a tongue-in-cheek, you know, kind of link, obviously, waifu bartending. And I think, you know, I think it kind of provides a little bit of the humor that Valhalla has.
So, you don't have to answer this next question if you don't want to, but I'd be amiss if I didn't ask this. Do you have a waifu of sorts?
Do I have a waifu of sorts? I would say if I had a particular waifu for myself, I would definitely say it would have to be Mitsuru from Persona 3.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, right now for me, it's the character. I don't know if you've seen the show Is It Wrong to Try and Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, but the character of Hestia, I would say right now, would be my waifu. Since you revealed yours, I decided to reveal mine.
Yeah. I've never heard of that. What did you say the name of that show was?
It's a long title. Is It Wrong to Try and Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon? It's very RPG influence. It's actually probably on its way to being the best anime of the year.
Wow, really? That the title alone makes me very curious. So I'm definitely going to check that out as soon as I have a chance.
Yeah. So, please do. You know what? I'll send you a link later on so you can check it out.
Yeah, man. That sounds great.
All right. So, what made you decide to do the visual novel route for Valhalla?
Well, really, that was actually kind of the route we took on our first project. Again, like, as far as the team, we're very big on storytelling. There's a lot of messages and a lot of things that we feel like can be said through a visual novel, and when it's really focused on the story-driven aspect of a game. So that's kind of why we took the visual novel route. And even with that being said, we wanted to make it a little bit more interactive and kind of steer away from some of the, you know, normalities or cliches of visual novels, such as like maybe traditional, you know, dialogue choices in visual novels. We decided to kind of change that up as well.
Yeah, kind of like what the guys over who created the game Honey Pop did with the whole Match 3 sort of game. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Yes, I have. I actually played that game.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised by it. Like, I know it's sort of arrogay, and well, not sort of, totally arrogay, but
right,
I really enjoyed it. I had a lot more fun with it than I initially thought I was going to have.
Yeah, same here.
So, how does the bartending mechanism fit into how the narrative of the game is told?
That's a great question. So the dialogue, instead of having your standard dialogue, I guess, branches and trees to kind of, I guess, steer the conversation in a particular direction, the dialogue in Valhalla is going to depend entirely on the state of your client. So you can give them a considerable amount of alcohol in the game, and of course that'll get them drunk, which will change their behavior and change the dialogue as well. They'll also react to different types of drinks that you give them every time. So the story can change depending on how you treat them and what you serve them. So everything is going to be done with the bartending mechanic as far as driving the narrative along and driving the interactions with the clients. Another thing is that it's kind of another focus on the gameplay aspect of it too, is being able to really understand and know the personality of your client and getting to know them. Because there may be instances where they come in and say, you know, give me the usual or give me this. And they may ask for a specific drink, but you know this character well enough that it would, if they're in a foul mood and they ask for this drink, well, maybe this would put them in a little bit of a better mood or get them to relax. And that has a lot of potential to, you know, branch into different endings for the characters as well.
Very interesting. Now, I remember playing it at PAX East, and I remember, you know, getting some of the drink orders right, some of them getting it wrong. And there were some occasions where if I got it wrong too many times, they would just walk out of the bar, not tell you anything. So I found that pretty interesting.
Right. We do want to make it to where, you know, on the same token of, yeah, you can get a lot of different, you know, dialogue choices and endings here. and you can either get the character drunk or put them in a good mood or get them to relax. At the same token, you might give them something that they just absolutely hate, and they might get pissed off and just say, you know what, I'm out. And you just lost a customer for the night.
Now, I may know the answer to this already, but are the drinks you make in the game concoctions that our listeners can make in real life?
No, they're not. To my knowledge, all the ingredients are completely made up and cannot be made in real life.
You see, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to let our listeners know that.
Right, just in case.
Although I will say this, perhaps somewhere down the line, you guys can create your own sort of Valhalla mixed drink book compilation for the game.
Yeah, that would be amazing. You know, just add some real ingredients here and there, and because some of the drinks actually, like, even playing through the PAX demo myself, some of the drinks I was like, damn, that looks really good. It's a shame that's not a real drink.
Maybe you can work with some of your local bartenders or some of the local areas and see if you can actually create real Valhalla-inspired specialties.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That'd be a lot of fun.
Now, what sort of customers will your character be coming across in the game?
All kinds. Christopher Nando and I, you know, we've talked a lot about the different characters that will appear in the game. And there's just a wide variety of various characters. I can't speak on too many of them right now, but you do have some very unusual ones. For instance, Dorothy. You know, she was actually in the prologue version. Yeah. She is actually an android sex worker, so that's interesting enough as it is. And then you'll also meet other characters like, in the game, you have the augmented eye, which is kind of, I guess, the news outing for Valhalla. You'll get to meet the editor-in-chief for that. You'll get to meet, you know, some street punks. You'll get to meet some various parodies of gaming personalities as well through the game. You'll meet some people who are, again, kind of the street punks, and you'll meet some people who may be a little bit higher on the status totem pole, who have a little bit more money and a little bit richer. So you're going to meet a lot of diverse characters in the game as far as personalities and, I guess, social status goes as well.
And there's also a corgi involved as well.
Yeah, I can't forget about the corgi.
That was actually a very cute surprise when he popped up in my demo. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, it was really funny too, because I remember we were following on Twitter, you know, just kind of checking to see how everybody was enjoying the PAX demo. And we actually, you know, put that corgi in there kind of as a hidden character. And there was one person who ended up finding it. I remember they just absolutely loved it. And when we started retweeting it, you know, everybody started going crazy, and they were like, who's the secret character? Who's the secret character? How do I get it? And then when everybody started finding them, they found it hilarious. So it was great.
Awesome. And see, you're already getting some positive feedback from the players and everything, and that tells you that you're on the right track for this game.
Yeah, it's been amazing. The feedback, again, I think when we first started this for the Cyberpunk Gym, we were just, you know, looking to make kind of a simple Flash game that we all enjoyed and was kind of a homage to our influences, and the feedback that we've received on the game has been phenomenal so far, and it's been very inspiring and motivating for all of us.
Now, as the composer for Tsukuban Games, can you share with me with how you decided on the musical direction for Valhalla?
Sure, absolutely. So, myself personally, you know, kind of like how Christopher Nando, I keep saying that we're all very inspired by anime of the 80s and 90s, particularly cyberpunk anime of the 80s and 90s. When Chris brought the idea to me, I was ecstatic. I was like, you know, that sounds terrific. You know, this will give me a chance to kind of write in this style, because honestly, like working as a composer on different projects and things like that, that's not really a style of music that you hear very, very often. So we talked about, you know, Chris talked to me a little bit about the mood he wanted to set with the game and everything. And you know, we're the three of us are all very, I guess I want to say, on the same page as far as like what creative direction we want to go in. Like, we all trust each other and we all have the same kind of taste. So Chris kind of told me a little bit about the kind of vibe and feel that he wanted to provide for Valhalla. And from there, he just kind of trusted me to run with it, you know, and I understood that since this game is going to be, you know, very influenced by 80s and 90s anime, then I used a lot of that for my inspiration and writing the soundtrack for Valhalla. I wanted to give it a little bit of a nostalgia, I guess, kind of feel to it, and then also kind of pay homage to soundtracks from the 80s and 90s anime, as well as, like, you know, older school generation games for the Sega Saturn, Dreamcast, and PlayStation.
excellent. And I got to tell you, so far from what I played at PAX East and even the prologue demo, I'm loving the direction. I love the atmosphere. The soundtrack sounds great. And honestly, I can't wait to dive in more into Valhalla.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So has an official release date been announced for the game?
We don't have anything ironed out concrete yet. We do know it's going to be this year, but there are a lot of details that we're working on and things that we're polishing up. And we're, you know, we want to make sure, with this being our first project and being as special as it is to us, we want to make sure we have everything the best it possibly can be. So we're working around the clock. So that's really all I can say is that we do know it's going to be this year, but we don't have a ironclad release date set just yet. But we have a lot of new info that will be coming soon.
All right. So for our listeners who are just finding about Valhalla, I would like you, Mike, to convince them on why they should get the game.
Waifu bartending. You're a cyberpunk bartender who serves plenty of waifus. You get them drunk and you listen to their life stories. What's better than that, right?
I don't think there's much that's better than that. Mike, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders No Race. Valhalla coming later this year in 2015 on PC, Mac, and Linux. Is it going to be Steam?
Yes.
All right. So where can our listeners find out more info on Valhalla?
You can find out more info on Valhalla through our Twitter account. We do updates on that at Tsukuban Games. You can also look at our webpage at waifubartending.com.
Excellent. Thank you again, Mike, for joining me here on No Borders No Race. And right now, we're actually going to spin a track that will be appearing in the game that you composed called March of the White Knights. But before we do, can you share a little bit about the song and what it was inspired by?
Yeah, absolutely. So most of the soundtrack for Valhalla has a much more ambient and laid-back atmosphere to it. This track is going to be a lot different as it's a lot more aggressive. I guess my mindset is, with this being a cyberpunk soundtrack, I did want to write something that had a little bit more of a thumping beat to it and that was a little bit more aggressive. This particular track, the concept behind it was, I guess, a kind of a being chased down track, kind of an action scene track. The name March of the White Knights is actually a reference to the White Knights who are in the game Valhalla, which will be one of the characters that you serve as a White Knight. And they're kind of the, you know, the police force through the city of Glitch City and Valhalla. So this particular song, the concept behind it was, you know, the White Knights, they're a group of rebels or a group of hackers, you know, trying to escape from them, basically.
Very cool. So our listeners, here is Michael Carey's composition of March of the White Knights from the video game Valhalla. Will this soundtrack actually be available to purchase?
Yes, absolutely. Once the game is released, the soundtrack will also be available on Bandcamp at no charge. It'll be free.
Excellent. That I think that'll make our listeners happy. So enjoy this song, March of the White Knights. And thank you again, Michael, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
the School Rumble, that was Yui Horley and Unscandal with the song Scramble. Earlier this year, Yui Horley released a new album called World End No Niwa, so go and give that a listen if you can. Although I will say this, probably our guests Andrew and Jonathan Fleming from Wicked Anime may not, I wouldn't say they wouldn't like a couple of songs on there, but there are a couple of songs on this album that will remind them of a certain anime that they don't quite like.
Oh, which one?
Golden Time.
Oh, yeah. No, that was me. I watched Golden Time. Jonathan didn't watch it.
Yeah, I can't attest to his hatred for it, but, you know, I've heard the rants.
Yeah. No, it was like it started off good, and then I was just like, wow, this sucks.
What you say, it reminds you of the that lovey-dovey couple that you just wanted to smack across the face?
Yeah, one day I hope to rant about that show.
You will get a chance. I know you will give a chance. But anyway, we're not here to talk about things that you don't like. We're here to talk about something that I think we could all agree on was just pure awesome. And that was Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So, just a bit of a backstory. George Miller, the original writer and director, back bringing his original popular franchise to a new generation, and oh my god, this was a grand slam, man. This was This was as much of a grand slam as you could do with a continuation of a series, especially when you don't have any of the original. Well, actually, no, there was one original actor from the original series.
Yes, that, yes, there was,
that played Who was it?
The Immortus Joe.
Immortus Joe.
Yes, Hugh Keith Byron, who played the original villain in The Road Warrior.
Yep,
that's right.
But
yeah, it was everything. It was just it was Mad Max. Like, you watched it, and it felt like
a
genuine same Mad Max movie that you know from.
Yeah, all the way down to like the graphics that they used, the graphic design, to the editing. Like, it was edited like an 80s film.
Mm-hmm. Yes, even the soundtrack sounded like something straight from the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And oh wow, the guys who did it were the electronica guys, the Junkie XL.
Yeah. Junkie XL.
Junkie XL. But wow. I mean, first of all, doing the whole practical effects too was a big plus. Making it feel real. Not any of this CGI sort of fakeness that we usually see in those sorts of movies.
Coming from that CG industry, I am still very happy to see it when a movie has more construction workers than they do in the effects department.
Agreed. That's why I'm kind of looking forward to what J.J. Abrams is doing with Star Wars, because he's using more practical effects in that one than he is with CGI.
Yeah, although it seems he's pulling MIT engineers rather than just regular construction workers.
Yeah. So, how do we give this premise? We have Max, he gets captured, and there's a group of women who are trying to escape from these evil warlords, and Max goes in and gives them a helping hand. But as people have realized, that the women are more up front and center than Max is.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because it's the same thing that they did when Dredd came out. Like, Dredd was an amazing movie, and Max is an amazing movie, and it's all because they chose not to follow a specific storyline. They literally did an adventure in the middle, just in the day in the life of Max.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just another adventure.
Which is how the entire Max series has been done.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, the first Mad Max movie was the only one that was told from Max's perspective.
Yeah, because it was his origin story.
The Road Warrior was a tribe of people telling the tale of Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, Beyond Thunderdome, was the children's perspective after Max had left it. They're telling the tale of how Max saved them.
Right. And meanwhile, this one is from the perspective of outsiders, women who are trying to escape, trying to find what was called the green place, so they could have the freedom that they weren't getting from the warlord.
That's right. Yeah, it was phenomenal. I couldn't believe it. They put so much hard work into that movie, and it really, really paid off. Like, I hope this movie makes millions.
Especially because George Miller already has, like, two more scripts written.
Yep, he's got a he's hoping that this is going to lead towards a new trilogy. And from what I've been reading, it's been doing pretty good. This is Saturday when we're recording this, and the Friday numbers, they got, what, over 16 million, which is pretty good for an R-rated action flick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We know people who saw the movie twice on opening night.
Thursday.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're not talking about, like, Friday opening. We're talking about opening Thursday.
Yeah.
So they went to the 7 p.m. and then they went to the midnight screening or something?
Pretty much.
Probably.
Pretty much.
All right. That shows dedication. That shows how much they want this movie to succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and how good it is. Not exactly. Just how much they wanted to succeed, but their willingness because of how good it was.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt all right, you know. Yeah. It was right, you know.
Every character was right and every shot was right. Like, everything about it was just the correct way.
Yeah,
that you're supposed to film a movie.
The way that you feel, you actually feel like the pacing of when Furiosa and Max start to trust each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, it happens pretty fast, but it also happens really naturally.
Right,
you know,
because the same time, you got to think that these are dire situations they are in, so they need to trust themselves quickly.
Yeah, all they're trying to do is survive. That's what Mad Max is about. You just have to survive in your current situation.
Yeah.
Now, initially, when I was first hearing about this movie, I was a little bit worried before any trailer came out, because this film has been in development hell. Back to when it was supposed to be coming out in 1988, Mel Gibson was supposed to still play Max,
yep.
And he was just having such a hard time getting it made. And now that it has become... What's the best way to say it? It's the hype. It is real, it is true, and it is everything you want it to be.
Yeah, this movie was actually even supposed to come out about 10 years ago, but that was exactly the time when Mel Gibson went through his, you know, crazy spell.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was actually supposed to be Mad Max 4.
Yes.
But because Mel Gibson was no longer Max, they kind of scrapped that. And then they decided just to make it something else altogether. I mean, and I can understand back, you know, when in 1988, when this one was originally supposed to be developed, George Miller had a hard time writing even beyond Thunderdome, because while it was in pre-production, he had a writing partner. His producer, Kennedy, was his last name, in Kennedy Miller Productions. He died in a crash, like a helicopter crash or airplane crash, something like that. And he had such a hard time writing beyond Thunderdome that the movie suffered itself.
You can tell.
Yeah. And I guess it kind of shut him down for Mad Max 4, you know, back then.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Right. Well, let me correct it. It was back in 98 when they were talking about doing Mad Max 4, so my apologies.
Oh, was it that long? Yeah, okay.
That sounds right. After. Yeah, that sounds correct.
Yeah.
Well, because there was a movie, like, I think Thunderdome was 88.
Yeah,
80. I mean, the first one was 79, mm-hmm. Then the next one was, I don't know.
Because if you want to think of how far along this movie has been in development hell, Heath Ledger was even tapped to play Mad Max before he passed
away.
Wow,
really?
Jeez. Might have saved him from being the Joker.
Maybe.
So can we talk about the specs of this movie for just a minute?
Like, yes, I would absolutely.
I would really, really like to talk about how they shot 480 hours of car chase.
Yeah. they sifted through. Yeah. So this is the way that it worked. So they had flyover drones that had 360 degrees worth of cameras on them that were filming at all times and filming the entire chase. That's why you got those really awesome aerial shots.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then the action, when the action also took place, they did the same thing with trucks. There were trucks with a 360 degrees worth of cameras on them driving at 100 miles an hour with all these people doing their own choreography so that they just captured whatever they drove through at the time when, you know, the trucks passed by certain points. And it's almost like it creates the ability that if you go back and watch the movie two or three times, you can see something new. You can see a new fight every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then not to mention, you have some of these amazing stunt workers doing different crazy things. Some of these people were actually people from Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, you know it.
Olympic athletes. And the fact that they were doing all this with 360-degree camera angles, some of them doing it in just one take, because let's face it, some of the stuff that they were doing, if they fucked up the first time, they're not going to be doing it again.
I wouldn't want to be hitting that dirt more than once. Oh, man, seeing those people fly off those cars and hit the ground, ugh. Yeah, it was real.
Yeah.
Speaking of real, it made me think of those kung fu movies that we were watching a few months ago, where it was all the stuntmen and what.
Those were the Thai martial arts.
Thailand. Yeah, the Thai martial arts movies where they were basically doing all these in one take, because if they mess up, like in that one scene where dude gets punched and it turns out he went to the hospital for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably the same thing happened with this movie.
Yeah, it creates a whole new standard. I mean, I know that all the articles that you'll read will say this too, but it's true. It creates a whole new standard.
Oh yeah, no, it's dead serious. Like, if every action movie has to live up to Mad Max now,
right?
Certainly would make for a better film all around. Yeah,
just about anything. It makes me think of oh my god, there was this movie that came out a few years ago that had a sort of that post-apocalyptic feel to it. It wasn't Mad World. It was something.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Dread.
Not Dread. Although Dread is another one of those movies where that's now the standard for those types of tower offense movies.
Yes. The Attack the Tower movies.
Yes, Attack the Tower. I sometimes call them tower offense because it's a video game term. But here's my question, because I did want to bring this up. Before this movie even came out, a couple of days beforehand, there were these, let's call them idiots, from so-called men's rights groups who were telling people not to go see it. And I was reading these articles by them, and I felt my brain cells were dying with every syllable I was reading. I mean, what's wrong with these people who can't understand that women can be as much of a badass as, you know, to put it bluntly, as badass as men?
I kind of have to just say, who cares? They're trolling on the internet, and I got to see Mad Max.
Exactly.
Like, I really could care less about what they say. I'm not even making a fuss about it, because their opinion means nothing.
You know what? That's probably the best thing to do. Just pretend those articles don't even exist and just sit down, relax. Well, yeah, sit down, relax, and get ready to cheer every 5 minutes for this film.
Oh yeah, I mean, there are just crazy people all over the internet. I mean, that's all I see it as. Says, hey, look at those. There's more crazy people on the internet. What? That's crazy. But you know, of course, then the other side, the feminists, have to go raging. It's like, look at what these men said, and then it starts a whole internet war again.
Yeah.
really great publicity for the film, though.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That way the men and women will go, fine, let's all just both go see this movie, and then they walk out of it holding hands, skipping, going, we just saw the best action film of the year, la 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 la.
See, but when I write my stories, the comic book that I'm writing right now, it has a lot of female-based leads. The way I'm doing the story is very much like how they wrote the women in Mad Max. So if it's making those types of people angry, then I guess I'm doing the right thing as well.
Exactly.
So, good for you. Yeah. So I'm happy about it. Oh no, it's not like I don't want it to be a good for me kind of a thing, because that's literally just how I wrote the story.
Like, no.
Like, these characters exist because they are human.
They exist.
You
know?
Yeah, exactly.
They're human characters.
I'm more saying good for you, because you're going towards what you want to create for characters. You want to add a sort of realism to them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I don't go along with the whole, like, oh, women are being pushed to the side, and the lead is a male, but it's like, again.
So is Max.
Yeah, but yes. But again, like, there's like, they're, you know, not being followed, or like, yeah, it's it's a non-issue to me. It's a non-issue.
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to get at. It's a non-issue. And read my comic book when it comes out.
Now let me ask you, what did you guys think of the performance of Nicholas Hoult in this movie? The guy who played War Boy Nux, the lovely day guy.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah. Yes.
He was such a good character. Like I was really happy whenever he was on screen. He just did so well.
So
I feel like he really represented the adrenaline of this film.
Yeah, and well, not only that, but he also followed, for those who like things like Fist of the North Star and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, he very much followed the anime formula for a bad guy, where Max is Kenshiro. Max is the anime hero. And then Nux is like the bad guy for the time being.
No, I say he's like Bat.
Yeah, well, no,
to a lesser extent, but I mean, like, I think he's like, I guess Bat. So, he's a but like, thieving kid.
But in like, so in Manime, like, Manime hero fights bad guy realizes he's wrong, bad guy becomes good guy.
He's like Jean.
Jean. I was thinking more like Polnareff from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, but.
Well, yeah, that's who I meant. Jean.
Oh, yeah, Jean-Pierre Polnareff, yeah.
We're talking about the same person.
Nobody calls him Jean, Evan.
I'm sorry. I call him Jean. That's his first name.
Jean-Pierre Polnareff.
Because Polnareff. See, because I can't say Polnareff.
Polnareff.
Polnareff. There, there. I finally said it.
You did it.
Yay.
High five.
Yay.
You speak French now.
Yeah, which is weird because I'm French-Canadian.
Now, oh, that's too bad. I'm just regular Canadian.
Now did you guys salivate at the sight of that guitar player in this movie?
Right? I felt like they didn't actually get a real guitar player. They just had somebody strumming notes.
See, like the funny thing
it's an actual musician, Iota. He's an Australian musician. He's also an actor. In fact, he actually beat Hugh Jackman in some theater awards. A while back.
Wow. See, and what I thought was really cool was whenever he was on screen, like, the music, the war tunes that he was playing, like, kind of matched up with the background music, so it, like, added that little extra texture.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what, that was really great.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of either Iowa-era Slipknot or Antichrist Superstar-era Marilyn Manson. Especially with the big war drums in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like the feeling that he gave off. Like, every time you saw him, he
was in your face.
Yeah, he's such a harmless character, yet every time you see him, you kind of get this feeling of dread and impending doom. You know? Like, it's really interesting how they did that.
Well, and then there were other characters like Nathan Jones, who played Rictus Erectus, which was Immortus' son.
Yes.
You know, the big strong man.
Oh, yeah, he was cool.
He's an Australian strong man. Like, he's an actual Australian strongman, has won strongman competition and championships around the world, and they call him the Mega Man in Australia, and he's like 6'8".
So, in Japan, is he called the Rock Man?
Yeah. Mega Man jokes.
Yes. Yeah. Rictus was the one who was, I had a brother, and he was the best, and he was the perfect.
Yeah, he was perfect.
Let's also talk about, like, some of the other cool kind of Dick Tracy kind of characters that they added to this, the bullet farmer.
See,
the bullet farmer was so awesome.
Oh, his car was awesome too.
I am the judgment. He's like,
he pulls a bullet from his teeth. Oh my god, that was amazing. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that.
When it comes to villains in movies, Dick Tracy villains are. Ooh, It's they're not actually Dick Tracy, you know, from Dick Tracy, but like it's what I like to call, I label them as Dick Tracy villains whenever
they're very cartoon character-y, campy.
Well, and they have like their own special set of quirky skills.
Yeah, like they have one very specific thing that they're good at, and that's what makes them like their villain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, and like they have a distinct feature about them that makes them a villain. Oh, and it's so good.
And I mean, like any costume designer who, like anybody who's aspiring to be some sort of costume or set designer in the movie industry, this movie is your dreamland. Like the costume design in this movie is brilliant.
Yeah,
utterly
agreed. And do you know what I like too? It had that sort of gore look to some of the villains as well.
Oh, for sure.
Well, it's it's all that look, that post-apocalyptic punk-esque look, you know, the
everything's punk. Made of leather and tires.
Yeah, you know, everybody looks like a punk rocker, and like it's things that inspired Fist of the North Star and anything post-apocalyptic. It was actually funny. I was looking at the old Mad Max movie posters, and the first Mad Max said on the poster, "The maximum force of the future." They didn't even have the term post-apocalyptic yet because George Miller created it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That made me so happy.
Now, speaking of anime as well, George Miller, first and foremost, he cited the film Akira as the main inspiration for the film. But also, initially, when things weren't looking so good for doing live action, he almost went anime route for Mad Max. He almost made an anime movie of the character.
Oh my gosh.
That would have been sick.
That would have been out of this world. That would have been, but then essentially he'd be making Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, right. Pretty much.
Well, here's my question. If he had done that, which studio do you think would have done it perfectly?
Ooh, that's a really tough one.
Studio 4C would have done a good job. Studio IG would have done a good job. Those two, I think one of those two.
Yeah, but I would have loved to have seen. Obviously, I'm a fanboy. Studio Trigger, but they didn't.
that would make
you know. Upset. It's funny because there is a couple characters in Ninja Slayer that show up that have a very Mad Max look to them.
Really? Yeah. I've only been able to see the first two episodes.
See, the only thing about like Trigger is they like to use a lot of close-ups, but like Mad Max is like all about like showing that world.
Yeah. No, so, it's true. A lot of wide-angle shots.
So you would definitely need like IG or 4C to do something like that.
Yeah, somebody who can create a vast world, almost like Hayao Miyazaki.
Hayao Miyazaki's Mad Max.
I want to see Studio Ghibli's Mad Max.
There we go.
Vast landscapes and important character development. There we go.
And hey, this film had a strong female lead, so that follows Miyazaki's motif. Yeah,
Miyazaki would be all about that.
Miyazaki would be all about Mad Max.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of female leads, I think Zoe Kravitz is my new Halle Berry.
Oh my god, it's close to knowing. She was...
Yeah. Gorgeous,
yeah.
She was a very pretty lady.
Sorry for being in the Divergent films.
Yeah, it's like she's popular now because she was in the Divergent films, and it's just like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, with the
well, you know what? She's Lenny Kravitz's daughter, so it's okay.
I told you.
Is that really what it is?
Yes, she's Lenny Kravitz's daughter.
Well, I was reading up on her, and I didn't see... Lenny Kravitz. Yeah, daughter of singer-actress Lenny Kravitz. That would make sense, because who the hell else has the last name Kravitz? Yeah. No one, that's who.
No one. But, yeah, nothing was miscast. The script was beyond perfect for what you want to do with Mad Max. Yeah. Soundtrack was great.
Oh, yes, it was.
I can't think of anything I would change about this movie.
That's why it's been getting perfect scores everywhere.
Yeah. I know! It got 4 stars in the Boston Globe! They never give perfect scores for movies like this.
See,
the only thing I would have asked for would have been more action.
Yeah,
you know,
more
like,
action.
Like, you can't, see, and you can't ask for that. And like, it's too much to ask for, but that's all you can ask for,
well,
more action.
With 480 hours of extra footage that they did not show in the movie, I expect to see an extended cut of the DVD.
Exactly, the uncut edition.
Yeah, the
Fury
director's
Road.
Cut of the movie.
Yeah,
it's going to be three hours long, just 4 explosions.
Wow.
Oh.
A whole extra hour of car chase scenes.
Oh, but folks, if you can't tell by now, please go see Mad Max Fury Road if you haven't seen it yet.
It is absolutely a keeper, another movie that has yet made it to the top of my favorite movies ever list.
Do you think this will be your manime of 2015?
Here's the thing. Are you talking about for the hardcore anime panel?
Yes.
Yeah, for the hardcore anime panel, if you guys are listening, we can almost guarantee you that Mad Max will be the hardcore winner of 2015.
Almost.
I will say this, though. If there is another contender that winds up beating it, you can make it the Australian hardcore anime.
That's a really good Maybe point. Somebody will actually get it right this time. Because we have yet to have somebody.
I know! It. How did no one know John Wick?
No, no kidding. That was easy.
Oh my god!
We thought it was an easy one. We thought we were going to give away a t-shirt, but nobody got it. So, you know, there's always
surprises.
There's always
surprises. With Pacific Rim!
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the first year was Dread. Like, it was, we hit the nail on the head every time. Every year we get it correct. It's
especially with the reaction of the people. Every time you reveal it, everyone goes, oh!
Yes, so be prepared, because Mad Max Fury Road may in fact be our hardcore winner of 2015.
All right, now before we end this, moving on to something very quickly. The Boy and the Beast getting a theatrical release this year here in America. Yeah. Are you excited?
How can you not be?
No.
My favorite director who has made my favorite movie consistently every time he's released is releasing a movie and I'm going to see it? No.
But this year, we're not going to have to wait too long. And the thing I like is, I'm wondering, is Funimation now going to be becoming a bigger wig in the theatrical film department?
Well, even after their success with even just Summer Wars, you know, like Funimation got a hold of Summer Wars and just like made a killing with it.
Yeah.
So.
And this time we won't have to go to the Museum of Fine Arts to see it in theaters.
Yeah. Because we went to see, you know, the whole art scene. To see Wolf Children,
which isn't a bad thing.
No, it's a great atmosphere seeing a movie awesome. Like that. But that makes me worry. Does that mean that Mama Rosa is not going to come to Cambridge, Mass to do a New England premiere of it if they're doing it so quickly?
Right.
And that's a good point. I don't know.
I would like to meet Hasoda-san.
Yeah. I will have to touch bases with the main guy, Ian Condrey, the professor over there, see if he knows anything, and get back to you on that.
Sweet.
But anyways, thank you again for joining us here on No Borders No Race, as always, Andrew and Jonathan. And please let our listeners know where they can check out your stuff.
All right, guys. If you guys want to visit Wicked Anime, we have a really, really fun podcast over at nerdyshow.com/wickedanime, where you can find our podcast, both our podcast and our videos. But you can also find our videos at youtube.com/wickedanimereviews. Perhaps you want to email us and join us there in the conversation and get our opinions on certain weird things. You can email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com.
And we'll read your stuff on our show.
Yeah, that's right, we will. And or you could hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/wickedanime, where we post reviews, news, anything cool that we see over the internet. We'll show you guys, to let you guys know what we're doing as far as events and videos. You can also find us at twitter.com, and you can tweet at us at @YoWickedAnime. And finally, you can find us at tumblr.com, tumblr.wickedanime.com or something or whatever. Yeah. And we tumble a lot of funny stuff over there. And hey, are you a fan from the Orlando area, perhaps? Or maybe you're going to Orlando in June? Well, guess what? So are Jonathan and me, and we're doing Wicked Anime Live. We're doing the hardcore anime panel
at the Geek Easy
at a comic shop.
Yay!
That's June 27th. We have a two-hour show, so it's an extended cut from our original panel cut.
Wow.
You guys can go there, meet the rest of the Wicked Anime crew. It's going to be a good time. So
it sounds awesome.
Yeah, so that's Wicked Anime Live, 8 p.m., 8 to 10 p.m. at the Geek Easy at a comic shop in Winter Park, Florida on Cimarron Boulevard. Cimarron Road?
U.S. Earth.
Yes.
Now, can you give our listeners a sneak peek of what to expect for the next episode of Wicked Anime?
Yeah, you can. So if you guys tune into our next episode, which should be from this recording next Thursday.
Yeah, it's actually going to be really interesting because we are doing American live action adaptions.
Yeah, but we're not doing American live action adaptions.
We're casting
our own movies.
Oh, the what if scenarios.
And we're starting with Full Metal Alchemist. So,
You know what? I had a joke idea for Tyler Perry's Full Metal Alchemist with Kevin Hart. It's Edward Elric.
Who's Edward Elric?
Kevin Hart.
Oh my goodness.
Snoop Dogg is Roy Mustang, and then you have to have Medea as the King Bradley.
Sure, Bradley.
It would be the best worst anime adaptation ever.
Can't have Michael Clark Duncan as Alphonse, though.
No. Oh, no. I was thinking of the kid who played Webster.
Webster? Like the dictionary guy?
Emmanuel Lewis.
Okay. Emmanuel Lewis. I know who you're talking
about.
He's
the one that's not... he was the one that was not Gary Coleman.
Yeah, he's the word guy.
Gary Coleman. Oh, good. I'm glad we cleared that up.
The only thing I can think of is he beat up Dickie Roberts at the beginning of Dickie Roberts' Childhood Star.
Yep.
Maybe. I remember. I have no idea. Whatever.
All right, guys. Thank you again for joining me on the show. And, you know, I'll totally have to cross over on a future episode of yours in the near future.
Sure.
Even though I just said near future like twice in one sentence. Anyways, speaking of something I'm also excited about, after many years, Hayate the Combat Butler is finally getting the U.S. release it deserves thanks to Sentai Filmworks. A couple weeks ago, they began selling the third series, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, and right now we're going to spin the end theme of that show. Here's Haruka Yamazaki with Koi no Wana.
「恋の罠仕掛けてみる」
From the album Blues Funeral, that was the Mark Lanegan Band with the Gravedigger song. Back in 2012, that album appeared at number 19 on our top 20 albums list. You know, for some reason, I can't help but listen to this particular song right after Koi No Wana. Maybe it's the imagery during Haite's end credits or something. Perhaps I just picture Mark Lanegan peering from behind the trees as the character Ruka finishes the song. I know, I'm just rambling. I think we need to finish up today's episode. So, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders Erased. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us at facebook.com/bostonbastardbrigade and facebook.com/landofash. For all other articles under the gaming, geek, and tech realm, go to egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. And don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Ash, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues Program. My thanks to Cassandra Kaw for setting up the interview with Tsukiban Games, and I hope you enjoyed those chocolate-covered espresso beans I gave you at PAX East. No, listeners, that's not good for anything. I literally gave her chocolate-covered espresso beans at PAX East. I want to mention that not only is Valhalla coming in 2015 to PC, Mac, and Linux, but also the PlayStation Vita. So, yeah, I forgot to mention that. By the way, the movie I was thinking of during the Mad Max segment was Doomsday. I mean, how can I forget such an easy name like that? But special thanks as well to Andrew and Jonathan for helping me out with that segment. Today, we end the show with the sad news of one of my favorite clubs, TT the Bears, announcing it's shutting down this summer. This was where I witnessed some of my favorite shows from Hunter Valentine, Flowbots, and, of course, the South by Southwest Japan Night Tour. It breaks my heart knowing this great venue is closing, as it holds many memories that I hold near and dear to me. So, in honor of TT the Bears, I will spin a song from a band that played at the very first show I went to at that venue, the 2007 Japan Night Tour. Here are the Goju Kaitens with a tribute to a beloved punk band from their debut album, Goju Kaitens no Gya. It's called Thank You for Ramones. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. We'll be right back.